There, recording.
So I'm Liz Hall, I'm the editor of Coaching at Work, and we launched an initiative last year, Climate Coaching Action Day, which, as I said at the time, it's been launched by us, but it's not owned by us. Lots of people, the idea is that loads of people would run with it and not even remember who launched it. And that's where we're getting. We've got lots of people taking part, and you've agreed to take part, Alistair, which I'm really pleased about. So big warm welcome to you, Dr. Alistair Scott.
Thank you.
You're a leadership coach, a sustainability expert, and co-founder of the One Leadership Project.
That's right. Thank you. And I think the coaching, Climate Coaching Action Day is brilliant. It's a great initiative, exactly the sort of thing that we need to sort of give people an excuse in a way to go towards this stuff.
Absolutely. No, I think you're right. There's something about sort of, you know, inspiring and promoting it without thinking, oh, I can't go there. Just have a play, you know. Yes. Of course, it's not just for coaches. And you say going towards this stuff. Of course, that's the title we've given this podcast, this video, Going Towards. So really looking forward. I've heard your pearls of wisdom before, so I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out today. So given the title of the podcast, I think that might be a good place to start, really. You know, how do we go towards pain, grief, and all these difficult things that come up around the scary reality we're facing?
Well, I thought I'd start with a sort of an analogy, which might be a bit sort of simplistic at one level, but it's a bit like when you get up in the night to go to the loo and you stub your toe on something that you've left in the corridor between you and the bathroom. And, you know, I distinguish between the sort of primary stress and the secondary stress. The primary stress is the pain you get from stubbing your toe. And the secondary stress is the pain you get from beating yourself up for leaving the thing in the corridor. And the going towards bit is just like being with the original pain. Instead of going off on some imaginary journey and getting lost in amongst all your frustrations and so on, just be with the pain. And what I've noticed, for example, you know, if you hurt yourself, is that it's just so much better to just be really present with that thing. And the climate crisis that we're all facing is that on a huge scale, where it can feel so scary and so complex and so distant, both in space and time. You know, it's like in the future, all these things, these nasty things might happen, that we can just sort of try and avoid it, try and, you know, find excuses for not engaging with it. But that, I think, is not a good way to go. It means that we're not, we're disintegrating. There's something there that we know we need to address. And most people, I think, at some level care about the planet and the future for their kids and people that they love. And so to turn away from something like that means that we're sort of tearing ourselves apart. That, you know, it's the opposite of integrity is that one bit of me is here, the other bit of me is looking the other way, and we're disintegrating. Yeah. So for me, it is about going towards, and I learned this, as you know, Liz, my wife got ill and died of cancer 5 years ago. And I was amazed at the responses of other people. A lot of people just couldn't really go there. You know, they didn't want to talk about it. And even just like the language that we use, you know, Sarah hadn't died, she had passed away, and sort of things like this, which sort of don't quite face it. So I chose to go towards it. And I thought, this is going to be, you know, this is one of life's big experiences. Death comes to everybody. We hope it doesn't come to us when we're 50, but it didn't make sense to not go straight towards it. So that was my kind of big learning ground for this theme, was a big, big stressful experience full of grief. Yeah, and that felt better. Mm. Felt better. It felt stronger and more empowered to sort of face into it and say, right, this is going to be really painful and tough. But it felt much better than trying to hide. You know, it's like the five stages of grief, the bargaining.
Yeah.
The
stories we tell ourselves. Well, I'm getting a real sense that, you know, it's a really good analogy, because actually this pain is so real for all of us, isn't it? You know, so it's, we can't deny it. It's there, like the stubbing of the toe or whatever. And it's, you know, this pain of what's happening with the climate is so real. And then getting this sense, of course, you mentioning your wife, of it being just so much more fruitful, really, much, much more beneficial and helpful, really. So, you know, to turn towards it.
Yes. Yeah.
And how might we as, I mean, some of the people listening to this will be coaches, some won't, but those of us who are coaches, how might we support others to turn towards what can be immensely painful territory? Mm.
Well, I think, so there is pain to be gone through. There's, if we are to reduce the worst effects of climate change, then pretty much everyone everywhere and all organizations need to adapt and change quite profoundly. This isn't a sort of a little cherry you can put on top of the cake. You know, this is about how we do things, how we operate. Energy and its use is fundamental to human society, agriculture, you know, how we treat the land and the seas. And most organizations have at least some engagement with those questions. And also, of course, so there's some adaptation to be done, change. Coaches are all about helping people to change. And also there are some huge opportunities. So there are, you know, there are vast growth opportunities in the economy in order to make our society zero carbon and inherently sustainable. So the going towards thing theme reads across as well into our coaching work, which is about imagining the better world. As Cristiana Figueres says in her book, "The Future We Choose," which is a very beautiful thing. And her book, she with what's his name, Rivet Karnak is his surname, can't remember his first name, anyway, her co-author, it's a really beautiful book, and they set out two future possible scenarios. And one is pretty bleak and the other is much better, actually. Our cities are cleaner and more livable and much more pleasant, quieter, you know, livable neighborhoods and all that sort of thing. Much more human in a way. Mm. And I think there is just a huge piece of work there, conversation by conversation, for us as coaches to help our clients to think about and imagine the future we choose. The future that we want to go towards.
Definitely.
And then to find all of the courage that's required to then lead the change. Because, you know, leadership, above all, for me, is about imagining a different place and taking people on a journey to that different place, the place they've not been before. And that takes courage, of course. And as we know from Aristotle, courage is the most important of all the human qualities, because it is the one that guarantees all the others.
Lovely. I hadn't heard that actually before. So, yeah, lovely. But first of all, the turning towards, so being present with the difficulty first, and then being able to move forward. I love that, the future that we choose. Yeah.
That's right. And it's also, you know, and that's at many levels, that's at a personal level. And then it's at an organizational level, a team level. You know, how will we be remembered, as we say in our legacy work, our chapter in your lovely book? How will we be remembered? You know, it's a great piece of a great coaching question and a great conversation to have with a team an organization as it's going through rethinking its purpose. Mm-hmm. And the great, I can't remember who it was who said, you know, there's no point wasting a good crisis, but. Mm-hmm. in a way, COVID is a brilliant crisis. It's a great opportunity. It's the moment of opening, when precisely because of the difficulty that a lot of us are going through and a lot of organizations, it's a moment to reinvent. It's a moment to choose to stop doing those things there that are damaging for people and planet, and to start doing these things here, which we know to be better. It's not going to be easy to get there, but we're just going to embrace those opportunities. And there's just so many coaching conversations in there at every single level, from the very individual to the organizational, including this thing about helping people to find their courage to go towards the pain. That's the challenge that's almost certainly going to be there.
Lovely, lovely. And I'm getting a sense of going towards it and then sort of being with it, but also maybe transforming it through. I know you do some work around compassion as well. And That's right.
Because the future world, as the spirit traditions, especially, you know, Tibetan Buddhism and so on, they teach us that there are two really fundamental insights. One is the interconnected nature of all things. And in the Anthropocene, where human beings dominate the planet, the consequences of our actions becoming more and more visible, and the interconnected nature of the whole world is becoming more visible. So it's just wise to embrace that idea of interconnectedness. And then the other principle is one of compassion, of being willing to face the suffering of others, including the natural world, and again, face towards it, as painful as it may be. And that compassion, that willingness to come at this from a place of compassion, is just incredibly central, I think, to a different way of doing things at every level.
Maybe our only hope, in fact, because it is painful work. We need that sort of tenderized heart, if you like.
Yes.
And Alistair, I know that you wouldn't preach at all, but I'm just wondering if there's any role to play for coaching or coaches or leaders or whatever to kind of help people come on board with the idea that we can't just keep going more, that just isn't going to work for us. So is there any sort of role to play there?
Yes, absolutely. So I think coaches can get a bit tied up with this whole, and I know for myself. So there's a couple of things I think that can hold us back. One is this non-directive philosophy in coaching. We say it's about the client's agenda. And so then that immediately raises the question, well, me as a coach, how do I put anything on the table? My doctorate was sort of partly sort of philosophy of science type of area. And, you know, if we think about objectivity, we think about scientists. Scientists are sort of held up as the most objective professionals that we have, because they're trying to get after knowledge. They're trying to, you know, sort the wheat from the chaff in terms of all this noise that they're looking at. But it's been, you know, repeatedly shown by sociology and philosophy of science that even scientists are not truly objective. They are human beings. They're influenced by their history, their culture, you know, their upbringing, their funding sources, their institution, their discipline. There are so you can see this kind of quite big passion for me about this. So if that applies to scientists, why would it not apply to us as coaches? So I think we delude ourselves if we think that we're coming at these conversations in a completely dispassionate, neutral, objective way. We can't. Inherently, we can't. So the question then is not, can I be objective, but actually, what do I stand for? And how am I going to put those things on the table? And I think in my colleague at One Leadership, Neil, he's got this wonderful Neil's Wheel, which you're involved in. And that's a really brilliant, non-directive, non-pushy, non-forceful, very gentle way of saying, these are things that I'm thinking about. What about you? And for people who are interested, you know, neilswheel.org is where that is. And it's just proving to be, it's launched about a year ago, it's just proving to be a really powerful way of opening up big conversations, big coaching conversations that go beyond simply what the client is telling you his or her agenda might be. And then I think there are a number of levels. So if we get caught up in the agenda thing, is it the client's agenda as stated in this moment? Is it the client's agenda as stated in this session? Is it the client's agenda as stated in our wider contract?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the client's agenda for themselves purely, or for their team, or for their organization? So, and how do we know unless we have that conversation? So in a way, it's about contracting all of that stuff and having the courage, you know, after all, as coaches, we're often asked to challenge as well.
Mm.
So how do we open up the biggest possible conversation that's actually going to serve the client and not take the first thing at first value and sort of snatch at that and hold on to that rather than go, okay, and what else? And what else? Bigger, bigger, bigger. So there's that piece of contracting there, which I think is, you know, can be really significant actually, and can really, really surprise everybody that they didn't know they wanted that conversation, but when they had it, it was incredibly helpful for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is very invitational, isn't it? But you know, hugely prominent, has, you know, it really does help people go beyond them. I think it was funny, isn't it? Because we're quite happy talking about taking a systemic stance and talking about multiple stakeholders. And then the minute we start getting into anything that mentions the word climate or, you know, environment, then we can sort of really balk at that. And it reminds me of back in the day with mindfulness. Oh, you couldn't mention the mindfulness word, you know. So there's something about the times maybe are changing, you know, and you guys obviously, I guess, have been at the vanguard of that, and some of us are catching up.
Well, thanks. I mean, I've been a lifelong environmentalist, and yes, it's been painful. And, you know, what I see happening are some of the biggest transformations in human history. We're rapidly moving away from fossil fuels. The upsurge in renewable energy is just extraordinary. And it's an absolute juggernaut. And the scaling logic, right, so-called Wright's law, when you double the output of a technology, it comes down at a certain speed in terms of price, and therefore you get this kind of beneficial cycle kicks off. It's happening with renewables, it's happening with batteries and battery electric vehicles. And the other huge mega trend, of course, is the interest in the plant-based diet, which, you know, is again triggered by people's concern for the planet, as well as for animal welfare and your own human health. Is these three really good reasons to, you know, to move towards more of a plant-based diet. And it's, again, it's this mega trend. I was reading in the paper at the weekend about, you know, companies that are producing plant-based milks, and some of them are about to float on the stock exchange and become a unicorn, i.e. worth more than $1 billion. You know, these are absolute huge mega trends. And the chief executive of Unilever, biggest global food company, saying this is happening everywhere in every country, less developed countries as well as more developed countries.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a kind of a big shift in consciousness. And I think if we as coaches aren't on that cutting edge, then we're not only sort of bystanders, the bystander effect, but we're not actually doing a very good job, because we're not at the vanguard. So I think there are, you know, and yet the coach, if we're fearful, if we have a sort of a fear-based feeling about this, about the clients and gender and so on, just checking time, then we could get caught up in, you know, that's another reason not to challenge the client's agenda, is I might not get this piece of work.
Yeah.
So it's another reason.
Times, yeah.
Say again.
Especially in this current climate, there's a lot of, yeah. So
exactly. So it's another challenge for us as coaches. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So was there anything else? I'm just pausing for a minute and seeing if there's anything else you want to share in this moment around this topic. And I know you had poems as well, so I'm just putting that out there. You're a poet as well as all the other things.
I mean, I've got some recommendations. I've got five recommendations for the end.
Perfect. Is there anything else you wanted to say before you come to those?
Well, shall I read a poem?
That would be lovely, Anne.
Yeah.
Great. Where is it? Hang on. So these are the compassion. Oops, sorry. These are the compassion practices.
Compassion practices that we were talking about.
I'm just editing them to try and get them up there.
So those of you who are tuning in, what's the website called? The compassion?
Compassionpractices.net.
.net. So that's something else for you, those listening or watching, to check out afterwards.
Yeah, so we're soft launching this week. We've got about 85 people have signed up at the website already, professionals who are interested in using these well-founded compassion practices in organizations to help to move the culture of an organization towards consistent compassion and kindness. Particularly relevant, of course, in the health and social care sectors at the moment, but we think they've got general application.
Lovely.
So we've spent quite a bit of time bringing together six practices that are for individuals, pairs, groups, and teams, and there are shorter or longer practices that people can use. So they're really powerful, and we use them a lot, and just brilliant. Yeah.
Very much part of this whole work that we're doing on climate and future we choose. So poetry time.
Yes, good. So poetry was unlocked for me when Sarah died. There was something just like a door opened, and every now and then poem just sort of pours out. And I don't really know where it comes from. So here's one I wrote, which actually kind of talks about the going towards challenge. I wrote it about a year ago. It's called New Decade. Possibly too late, we awake to a new decade, new realities, world burning, minds turning, maybe. Where is the source of humility? A willingness, seeing beyond self, courage of spirit, give, go first, change. Must the fire lick our toes to catch in our bellies, the flood reach our knees to douse our fires, age old, greed mainly, and standing by? What kind of sleep allows it all? Or are we simply self-medicating? Harsh realities, not realizing the only answer is towards the pain. Instead, we watch life on screens, large and small, our epitaph good at watching. We awake, possibly too late.
Wonderful. And I had the pleasure of reading it before, but hearing you read it out loud is a very different experience.
Perfect
for this,
this
chat we're having. And I felt really quite very moved by that.
Thank you. Good.
Lovely. I hope other people will be inspired to step forth in hearing that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite a vulnerable thing, really, because poetry really expresses. And so I'm just having to gird my loins and say, right, I can just get it out there.
A lot of emotion there. It was really lovely. I'm glad you were willing to share that.
Thank you.
So would be nice to just sit in silence after that. But in the interest of, you know, those tuning in, did you want to finish off with, I think, some recommendations of things for people to maybe explore?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So first of all, just a very mindful practice of being kind and gentle with yourself. But do start going towards the things that you find difficult about the whole climate emergency. If you hide away, I think you're just going to make it worse for yourself. That's what I find. So I just clock in and think, right, how can I get traction on this thing and do something that plays to my strengths, my piece of the puzzle, but be at the same time being kind and gentle with myself. So this is paradox of not not be kind and gentle with yourself by not engaging with it and hiding. No, I don't actually think that really works, but engage and be kind and gentle. So the paradox of both, not a duality. Secondly, just bite off a bit at a time. If you're going to train for a marathon, you don't go out from a standing start and run 20-mile training run. You're really going to hurt yourself. So just do a bit at a time. Build up to the bigger, more complicated stuff. And find friends, you know, find people who want to do, you know, share the same interest. But definitely, number two, do a bit at a time. Don't expect too much of yourself. Just engage progressively. Thirdly, courage is an act. People think of courage and they think of brave people and they just go, it's very easy to put brave people on a pedestal. You know, these heroes, you know, Mandela and people like that. Actually, courage is an act. If you read their autobiographies, they learned courage by doing stuff. It's a human quality that's learned. Mm. And so I think that's good to bear in mind as well. It's available to all of us. Fourthly, bizarre one, try a cold shower as a little experiment in courage and going towards. It can be 10 seconds, 30 seconds of your life when you just go towards something that's a bit uncomfortable. Mm. And I mean, apart from being incredibly good for you, which, you know, increasingly the science is showing, it's a really interesting little experiment in courage and completely harmless. And by the way, the science shows that if you're not sleeping well, if you've got anxiety or anything like that, cold shower before bed reduces the body temperature and helps you to sleep better. And I've certainly found that. And then finally, really, just a bit of wisdom I found somewhere, and I can't remember where, to my shame, and incorporated into one of my other poems, just says, discomfort is the entry price for a life of meaning.
Mm. Mm. I really love that. Well, I loved all of those, and I love the idea of courage being an act. I have to say, I'm not sure I'm going to have a cold show right now, because it's windy and cold, so if people can hear the door banging from the wind in the distance, that's just the nature kind of dancing around us. But I just love those. I love that. Can you say that last sentence one more time?
Discomfort is the entry price for a life of meaning.
Mm. Well, we've got a lot of meaning ahead then with the climate emergency, haven't we? And it's lovely, brilliant. Thank you so much, Alistair.
Real pleasure. Thank you very much. It's been a real honour to be interviewed by you, Liz. I've really admired your leadership in the coaching profession for years and years. You know, the effort that you've made and the skill that you've brought to bringing so much learning to the profession. It's just been amazing. So to be interviewed by you for this initiative that you created, very, very big honour.
Thank you. I was really honoured that you agreed to be interviewed. So lots of admiration back to you for all that you were doing. Thank you.
Okay, great. I'm going to stop recording.
Yep.